Now, why didn't I start with this song from the beginning? I still don't understand why I didn't start with the song from the very beginning. How's everybody doing? This is Luca Mino. And we are back for Learn to Unlearn. I gotta listen to this song just to the end. I love the snappiness to it. The orchestra. Last round. And then you see the orchestra director put his arms up and then quiet. Thank you. Wow, that was emotional. Very funny. How are you, Steve? Steve, are you there? The best producer in the world, somewhere in the fog. Are you there?
Nope, I'm not here.
No. Oh, geez, I'm not lucky then. He's not there. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Well, he is, apparently. And so am I. I'm lucky to have power. I'm glad to see everybody in the chat. It's quite something, you know. Why don't we start with that, talking about... Well, we're going to be talking about steadiness and the KISS formula in music, K-I-S-S. I'm sure the musicians that are listening know what that is. And even the producers like Annie know what that is, the KISS formula. We're going to be talking about that next. But there are so many things I want to talk about. It's great. You just kind of pick. And, you know, you have Steve telling me, well, you know, 30 seconds before the show, well, you better figure out what you're going to start with, Luca. If you don't know, I'm throwing you to the wolves. So let's just talk about the weather for a minute here.
I didn't tell you that today.
No, but that's what it's like every time, though, you know, pretty much. I don't know what you guys got, Steve, as far as weather-wise, but... I'm sitting there, first of all, thanking God we have power all the way through this. And second of all, I said to myself, I'm going to do a remembrance. I'm going to do a screenshot of my iPhone every single time I see that drop in temperature. So here I am from, what was it, zero that I started, actually. At zero is pretty good, right? Okay. Then I got one at -7. Because I kind of did other things and walked around. Then I got -8, -10, -11. Then I got to -16, and that's when it went up, started going up after that. But you're talking -16 with 40-mile-an-hour winds on occasion, gusting. So you're relatively -36 with the wind chill. We had -36. I got -36 on my phone. A friend of mine on the other end of town got -37. Pissed me off royally, but that's okay. I thought I was going to get all the glory, and I go onto Facebook to post it, and what do I see? Oh, one full Fahrenheit lower, 117 he got, -37 with the wind chill. Can you imagine? So, wow.
The coldest I've ever been in, Luca, I was in, Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. It was -25 with 30-mile-an-hour winds.
Oh, man. we were in Edmundston, New Brunswick, which is on the west side of right kitty corner to Maine, like right across the border from northern Maine, uh-huh. Madawaska, Maine.
Yep.
And I lived -55 Celsius. Okay, so -40 is where they both join. Celsius and Fahrenheit, -40. So imagine -55 for a week. Yep.
I bet nobody got out, did they?
Your nose hairs start. Well, it's not that bad. I mean, it's so bad that it's.
No, once you get past -25, it all feels about the same.
It's so dangerous. You go out there and your nose hairs start to stick right away as soon as you get out the door. I lived that for a whole week. And that's the kind of thing where you throw the boiling water in the air and you get that freezing cloud over you. That's when they love doing that kind of stuff. So, well, you know what? Since I'm on that story, no, I'm not going to confuse things. No, don't start playing around. Okay. So I'm glad to be here. I'm glad I had to figure out a plan B, Steve, for the show, because what are you going to do if the power goes out, Luca? Well, send all my PDFs or whatever they are that I read from, two or three of them at least, to either your Skype or your email. So you have a copy of that, and then you can get your email through. Hopefully the power doesn't go out with Verizon, my carrier. So if the power did go out, at least I had the phone. I had it figured out anyway.
Or you could have just taken it off.
No, I can't do that. No, today's too special too. And I have a very special something or other I'm going to start off with called the Daffodil Principle that I believe nobody's heard on this network yet, which I'm really happy about. Because I kept going, did you guys hear that already, the Daffodil Principle? Because it's such a beautiful story. I couldn't remember if I had told you guys yet, or you guys and girls yet. Hello to everybody in the chat. And thanks to Annie for having the radio station and having everything up and running and having the responsibility of it all on her shoulders. We appreciate her immensely. And thank you to you, Steve, as well. I got to say thank you, since I'm in a thank you mood, to my coffee machine, my Keurig, okay? I can handle all kinds of stuff with the power out, but don't tell me I have to handle no coffee, okay? That can't happen. So either you figure out, like, you know, you can use those muffin tins, right? Put a little candle inside each one of those things in the muffin tin. And you have to light the candles first, obviously, but you get boiling water that way. You can do that. Yeah.
Speaking of weather and stuff like that, it was about 5 years ago in February. We had one day it was minus 23 here. I was out snowblowing, and my mother asked me to take her car out to the gas station to fill it up because it was on a Sunday or something like that, whatever day it was. And Monday was the next day, and I'm out there at the gas station. Other people are too, and I've got a full snowmobile suit on, boots, gloves, fur cap, you know, the whole setup, the whole deal. And this guy pulls up to a station in a t-shirt and pants, and he gets out and fills his car up.
Yeah.
Tough guy. He was all of about 5'2", so he's a tough guy, you know.
I don't know how they do it, but I, you know, without coffee. So, I mean, I'm sitting here having a coffee warming up, right? But I mean, my coffee machine. Okay. So I'm thinking about getting my show ready. I'm writing stuff down that I'm going to go through today and start the coffee machine. All of a sudden it shuts off. And this is not funny. Okay. No coffee machine. So I start it back up, and it shuts off. I start it back up thinking, okay, I'm going to unplug it. I'm going to, you know, recycle it. It shuts off. I go to this is a true story. I go to my closet, okay, take out my Walmart half ASS, you know, coffee machine that I have as a plan B. I put it right next to it. And I look at the Keurig and I say, if you don't start working now, I'm going to replace you and I'm going to put you outside. And I turn around. I thought it was a joke, right? I plug in the Keurig. It works. The Keurig works. It still works. Okay? There was no way it could work before. You know, you plug it in, it goes through the cycle, heating up the water, and all of a sudden, it shuts off. Now it works. I couldn't believe it. So I actually have the other coffee machine right next to it still. You know, it's very not nice to do, but you know what I mean? It's your choice. You either work or you go outside. Okay? And it worked. I kid you not. So I got to get a laughing track sometime. I got to get a laughing track for myself. So let me start with the Daffodil Principle, shall we? By Geraldine A. Edwards. What's wrong with the Walmart one? The Walmart coffee machine is a standby. That's a plan B. They work great. Well, yeah, they work well, but it's been so long that I don't have that thing you put in it. Plus, I didn't have the coffee filters that go in it. You know what I mean? Like, that's a whole other thing I would have had to do. So it was like, it was pretty drastic. Thank you for reminding me. I got to get a note written to get my filters for that other coffee machine in case. Good idea. I was going to write that down. I forgot. Thank you. This is why I love the show, too. people in the chat telling you, Luca, can you turn that down a little bit, or can you do this or do that? That was a good idea. So the Daffodil Principle. Well, several times, I'm going to say it in the first person, several times my daughter had telephoned to say, Mother, you know, you got to come see the daffodils before they're over. And I'd love to go, but, you know, it's a 2-hour drive to Lake Arrowhead. And, you know, I'll come over next Tuesday. So I promised. Next Tuesday shows up and it's cold and rainy, but she promised, right? So there she is going to her daughter's place. You know, she walks in there and she's welcomed by the joyful, happy children and grandchildren and everything. And she says, forget the daffodils, Carol. Carolyn, the roads are horrible. There's fog. There's no way. You can't get me out there. Carolyn's going, don't worry. Trust me. You know, you can see the mother freaking out. Like, we're not going out in there. It's going to be okay. You'll never forgive yourself if you don't see this. Okay, Mom, right? So close your eyes. Do what you have to. We're going. So after about 20 minutes, we go to get to this small church. Around the other side of the church, you get this hand-lettered sign that says, with an arrow, it says Daffodil Garden. So we get out of the car. We each took one child's hand, right? Followed Carolyn down the path. And as you turn a corner, you look up and you just go, absolutely glorious sight. It's like somebody had taken a great vat of gold and poured it on the mountainside, on the mountain peaks, and everywhere around the surrounding slopes. The flowers were planted in majestic swirling patterns, great ribbons and swaths of deep orange, creamy white, lemon yellow, salmon pink, and saffron and butter yellow. And each colored, each different colored variety was planted in large groups, so they swirled and it twirled on its own like a river with its own unique hue. And there were 5 acres of flowers. And the mother whips around to Carolyn and says, who did this? And she says, just one woman, Carolyn said. She lives on the property, and that's her home. Right in the middle of the incredible flower place, there's this one well-kept A-frame right in the middle. They walk up to the house, right, and on the patio, there's nobody home. On the patio, there's a poster answering questions that you must have. The first answer was a simple one. 50,000 bulbs, it read. And the second answer was one at a time by one woman. 2 hands, 2 feet, and 1 brain. The third answer began in 1958. Wow. So for this person, seeing that, it was a life-changing experience, just like it would have been for anybody, right? I thought of this woman who I'd never met, who for 40 years before that had begun one bulb at a time, probably on her knees, right, to bring her vision of joy and beauty to the world, to an obscure mountaintop. Piss me off when they say that. It's not an obscure mountaintop. Every mountaintop is beautiful. But of course, in the writing, it says an obscure mountaintop because they have to say beauty and joy is brought to an obscure mountaintop. This is what I hate about my people. OK, we always say stuff like that. Bad weather. It's not bad weather. Where did that come from? It's not bad. Planting one bulb at a time, year after year, this unknown woman had forever changed the world in which she lived and in which everybody else lives. She had created extraordinary magnificence, beauty, and inspiration. Can you imagine what people think when they go there? Her daffodil garden brought one of the most important principles of celebration, and that would be this: learning to move towards our goals and desires one step at a time, often one baby step at a time, and learning to love the doing, learning to use the accumulation of time. And that's something I learned in my spiritual walk. You know, you go from point A to point B. You don't sit there and go, oh, I can't wait to get to point B all the time. No, the celebration is going from A to point B also. You know, everybody says, well, I can't wait to go to the show. The celebration is going to the show also, right? So the idea is, in my mind, and I love the writing, it continues, when we multiply tiny pieces of time with small increments of daily effort, we too can find, you know, we can accomplish magnificent things. We can change the world. And then she says, well, it makes me sad, you know, what I may have accomplished if I had thought of a wonderful goal like that 30, 40 years ago and I'd worked at it one bulb at a time through all those years. Can you imagine what I would have been able to achieve? And the idea is to say, no, you don't go there. You know, don't say what if. My daughter, she says, summed it up in this message of the day in her usual way by saying, well, start tomorrow. See? So you don't, in the words of my mentor, Leo Buscaglia, in the beginning, Leo used to say, you know, never come to the end of your life regretting, oh, I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would have done that. Never regret. So the Daffodil Principle says, stop waiting until your car is paid off, until your home is paid off, until you get a new car or a new home, until your kids leave the house, or until you go back to school, until you organize the garage, until you clean off your desk, until you gain or lose 10 pounds, until you get married. Right? We're always waiting for something. It's always an excuse in a way, until you retire, until summer, you know, until you die. There's no better time than right now to work on something that you can be happy with, one little tiny step at a time. Well, somewhere in Wisconsin, and this makes the person say he's really proud from that he's from Menasha. Somewhere in Wisconsin, this little gentleman that you don't see in the picture, right? The poor guy's stuck in the snow, and all you see is, you know, somebody hunched over, and he's on his bicycle, and he's got bags and bags and bags and bags behind him. I can see at least three or four of them. And he's on his bicycle, it looks like, and he's making his way home. Let me get that picture pulled up here. Yeah, and so Steve can see it. And he's got it's in a snowstorm, and he's got the trolley. And he's inching his way home on the street, on Main Street. And another gentleman stopped and pushed him out because he was stuck. And you're talking a blizzard, okay? This is during these times, like right now, this week. At that time, I stopped, and a plow truck from the Menasha plowed in front of him. And he stopped asking where he lived, and he plowed his way home. He plowed the guy's entire way home for him. Then not only made sure that he got up to his house, but helped him with his chair. A big shout out to Jim in plow truck number 26 in Menasha, Wisconsin. Right? He didn't have to. He probably went out of his way big time from the route that he had to do and brought that guy home. One person that everybody probably would have drove by and splashed, or, you know, gotten a whole bunch of snow in his face or almost killed him over, right? We don't even think about that. And this is my message today, you know. Hello, Spudman. Oh, it's good to see. Hello, Moon. Nice to see everybody on. And there's that K-E-W-L again. I know that's Sarah. I know that is. I thought that was pretty cool, you know. And I wanted to give a shout out to them. And well, I have a story to tell people, and this is a really cool story, because it's going from good to not so good. Okay, but I just want to use this to show how special one type of flower is. You know, the type of flower that only blooms once in like 50 years. Let me tell you the story. This is on Mauna Kea in Hawaii. On Mauna Kea, you have something called the Mauna Kea Silver Sword, also known as the Flower of Patience. Just listen to this. Listen to the words that they use. Known as the Flower of Patience, it's a rare and endangered species of flowering plant native to the island of Hawaii. It's a member of the Asteraceae or Asteraceae in Latin, whatever family, which includes other well-known plants such as sunflowers and daisies. The Mauna Kea silver sword gets its common name from its silvery sword-shaped leaves that are arranged in a rosette. The leaves are covered in fine white hairs. It looks like the bottom of it. It's really beautiful, which help protect the plants from the intense sun and high winds of its native habitat. The plant is a long-lived perennial, remaining vegetative for many, many years before it produces a flowering stalk. The stalk can reach up to 6 feet tall, and it's covered with hundreds of small, bright red and orange flowers. The Mauna Kea silver sword blooms once in its lifetime, after which it dies. The flower of patience is also a great symbol of resilience, as it can live up to 50 years before blooming. And it can survive harsh environments and harsh weather conditions. Right. On the slopes of Mauna Kea. The Mauna Kea silver sword is considered an endangered species due to habitat loss and overgrazing by introduced mammals and also other viruses and things that are bad for nature. They're called humans. We'll get to that in a minute. Efforts have been made to protect and conserve the remaining populations of this unique and beautiful plant. You should see the picture of it. Steve, you're looking at it, if you can see it. Blooming once in its lifetime in 50 years. It can wait 50 years before blooming. I think that's amazing. Okay. Why am I telling you this? Well, remember way back when we talked about Hawaii? And there was this woman, this matriarch on the floor, and she was really, really upset. You'll see what I mean by humans. There are certain kinds of humans. I could generalize it in that category of humans, yes, okay? Because when you're a human being, you care about people, you care, you're a compassionate soul, you care about nature, you care about everything, you care about every living entity, but some humans just don't care. And this is what I'm getting to. Mililani Trask, while she was blasting America, saying, no, you will not build on Mauna Kea, she adds this, and I got it right at the right time in the in the 10-minute speech, and I know you'll remember it. Listen to this.
You think we will continue to allow this? We worship there. The EVs of our kupuna are buried there. We have tolerated commercial science to the point that they continue the desecration. Did you know that we are the ones organizing with Sierra Club to remove 13 tons of trash? Because for years, for the first 20 years of Mauna Kea, the telescope operators wouldn't pay for trash removal, and the county wouldn't go to Mauna Kea. So they left all their trash out for the winds to blow down the Mauna. We cleaned it up with Sierra Club, not commercial science.
See what I mean? That's my point. Okay? And when I saw that beautiful flower, blow, you know, living on the mountains, on the mountainside like that, just in its glory. And I just pictured the trash through it, you know, alongside it. And I remembered, oh, why don't you play that clip? And you can explain to people how horrifically angering it is for, you know, native people or people that live, you know, like, okay, I'm living in this little tiny apartment, okay? And I get angry when I see people just leaving trash out front of the door. I'm like, how can you live opening your door and seeing trash out there? Like, they don't care. You go for a walk, you go around the complex, and you see people, all they see in the front door is trash. All they have to do is go and pick it up. They don't. This is what I mean. Being human being, taking care of one another, taking care of nature is what we have to do. And it just, it blew my mind. And I thought that was a really, really good example to give. I hope I answered that. And we move along. Whew. Wow. Okay, so I'm going to call this this segment The Thing. Because I feel so bad for people that have been jabbed and who have gone through horrific, horrific tales, horrific stories, families ripped apart, families dying. And I wanted to honor them in one story today. Let's go to Nevada, where a state I never go to. A Nevada woman who fought for her life for 2 years in hospital after The Thing passes away, leaving behind $7.5 million in hospital bills that have bankrupted her family. The woman's teenage son says, Tanya Marie Johnson was a 57-year-old employed by the state of Nevada and was mandated to get The Thing. After The Thing, she would spend the next 2 years fighting for her life of an unknown illness in the hospital, after which she became paralyzed from the waist down, developed blood clots in her legs and in her lungs, required the complete removal of her stomach and her spleen, flatlined 4 times, and was brought back to life and dropped to something like 70 pounds. Sadly, she's passed away. And I'm reading this on Facebook, and I'm going, oh, yeah? Well, we'll do something about that. We'll do something for the family. According to the son, the mother's hospital stay racked up $7.5 million in bills, and although the insurance has covered most of it, the balance has still bankrupted the family. You know, so this is kind of my job, is to think of, you know, everybody and ask, like I just saw Annie ask, how are you? You know, what's up? You know, how are you doing? You know, when was the last time you were asked that? How are you doing, Luca? You know, it's a beautiful thing to ask somebody. That's like saying you love them, you know. How are you doing? And every time I go on there, I got Boston Mark saying that, you know, how you doing, buddy? And I got, you know, Melissa saying hello, you know, and Sarah saying hello. And there's Spud, which we rarely see it for my show. It's an honor to have him on. That's the second time you said that, Luca. Right. So here I am finding out that, you know, either my videos have been removed from YouTube or I get an email from them telling me that I've merited a strike. Okay, but YouTube is going to leave something on there. They won't have a problem leaving something on there that shows an emergency message from Dr. Merrill Nass, N-A-S-S. Dr. Merrill Nass, Merrill written M-E-R-Y-L. Well, in this case, it really taught me a lot. I don't go on it anymore, but I always manage to find, you know, the clips that you can't find on Instagram because you're locked out, okay? And you write down what the clip is about, and you go to YouTube and you find it 3 times out of 4. So I was lucky enough to find it. And I have the link if anybody wants it. And if not, I'll have it in my show, my show article on the Liberty Beacon. Actually, I can go right now and I can just send you the link in the chat right there. Very interesting. She's, you know, saying like, you know, hey, guys, you know what? And I don't even have to do an introduction for her because she's going to lay it all out and you'll see what I mean. Have a listen to this, folks.
We're undergoing a soft coup. And the idea is to create a whole new set of laws and ignore the existing human rights laws and other laws under the pretext of pandemic preparedness and the biosecurity agenda. The WHO is developing through all its nations, but with the WHO directorate and the United States in charge, a pandemic treaty and amendments to the existing international health regulations that will remove the human rights protections currently embedded in the IHRs, will enforce surveillance, censorship, get rid of freedom of speech, require governments to censor and only push a single narrative. Also, we will be subject, if they can make this work, to vaccines developed in 100 days, which the organization CEPI is planning to do. And one of the people who founded CEPI was Jeremy Farrar, who is now the chief scientist at the WHO to bring this forward. Other things that the amendments do is to bind the states so they are no longer recommendations but enforceable edicts, provide a liability shield, get rid of intellectual property rights, move supplies from one country to another, enforce digital passports. And the Director General of WHO can demand that a pandemic or a potential pandemic exists. He can just declare it with no standards, and then countries around the world will have to obey. Also, the WHO will tell you what drugs you can and can't use in your nation once a pandemic is declared. Obviously, the budget will increase. One Health is another part of this. One Health is a concept that was created to enable the WHO, with these documents, to take over jurisdiction of everything in the world by saying that climate change, animals, plants, water systems, ecosystems are all central to health. Also embedded in this concept is a peculiar notion that humans are no longer of greater value than animals.
Oh, we've heard that before. Okay, let me go back to George Washington when he would say that the fox and the Indian, although they differ in shape, they're still animals of the forest. Okay? The Indian, according to early colonizers, that's what they were. They were no different than animals. Shoot on sight, whatever. Do what you want with them. Oh, yeah, right. They're not human, right. I like that joke that says that, you know, Christopher Columbus's men didn't have a problem knowing that they were young women on the shores, half naked when they arrived. Right. You know, so this is, oh, yeah. You know what? George Washington happens to be one of my favorite passwords. Because you know what they called him? They called him Hanadagayas, town destroyer. That's what his middle name was after his scorched earth campaign. When you come back from the break, we're going to talk about words. We're going to talk about words, different words that, you know, that people are using or that we can't use. Well, we're going to offend if we use this one. Well, we can't use that one. We're going to talk about that when we come back. And it's going to make a lot more sense. It did to me anyway after I prepared this. And this took me like 2 hours to prepare. So hang on. We'll be right back.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
I was going to do it again, Steve. I was going to do it again. I'm going to get ready for this. I'm going to move this around. I'm going to get ready for this.
And you're going to play the commercial again?
Sorry?
You're going to play the commercial again?
No. As soon as you're playing the commercial, right? So you want to align other stuff and get this ready. As soon as you click something else, it'll shut off.
Oh, I see.
Oh, my God. Right? There's always something, right? So I'm like, no, my instinct's going, no. And if I hadn't listened to it, okay, if you don't listen to your instinct, I'm going to say this a lot on shows like this. What happens? You don't learn the lesson? Okay, it'll happen again. And it gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Every time you don't listen, it gets worse. This would have been a tragic, you know, because I would have clicked on another link to get that ready and it shuts everything off. So, Steve, this is for you that I wanted to do this. So you're welcome to join. We've had this thing with the Jew versus Arab that really woke me up. So I want to use... I want to talk about Jew, I want to talk about Zionist, and I want to talk about, what's the other one? Well, let's go through it and we'll find out, okay? This wonderful woman, and I think it was thanks to Steve, again, who sends me all these clips. He's absolutely fabulous in the stuff that I'm looking for, because he knows what I base my shows on, and he knows I don't like doing politics. So he's really out there sending me some really good stuff, 3 out of 4 clips this time. Wonderful woman. I don't know her name, so I wrote down her message to read it for you today. How do you take nice Jewish boys and girls and turn them into monsters, killers of children, when they reach the age of 18? It takes a very long, thorough, and sophisticated education to do that. And my question was, how do you do that? So apparently she has an organization called Breaking the Silence, where soldiers confess what they did in the West Bank. And in many of these confessions, the soldiers say, I was educated to believe that whatever I do to Palestinians will save us from another Holocaust. Isn't that interesting? So they give you a lie to think, and it's two lies. Because that's not what's going to save you, and it won't save you from anything that didn't happen either. The Holocaust did not happen the way we were taught it did. And everybody goes, oh, you're a Holocaust denier. And I'm like, no. I'm saying that we were lied about it. You know, we were lied to about what happened. That's all it is. That's all you have to do. And then anybody who wants to bring the truth out afterwards is just slaughtered. And I'm watching on Facebook, you know, those posts about Auschwitz and those posts about this and those posts about, you know, Anne Frank. And you start talking, you just start dropping truths very politely. See what happens.
Say, look.
Okay? Yeah.
You know the old saying, two wrongs don't make a right, correct?
Yes.
Well, you know, you can say that about any atrocity in history. Doesn't matter what people.
Yeah. No, you're right.
The son should not pay for the sins of the father, or in this case, it would be the great-great-grandfather, whatever the case is, you know?
Yeah. See, do you know what the Indians say? I always go back to that. Who started the trouble?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's where the answer is. Who started the trouble? You always find out. It's always... you know, we've been lied to all our life. Oh, okay, but we told the truth about this.
Right.
or that. You
know? Yeah. So, yeah, you've caught us lying.
Oh, there it comes. There it comes, history. Look, his story.
You've caught us lying 17,333 times, but we're not lying about this.
Okay, this is my point, people. I'm not here to tell you to believe me. I'm here to tell you don't believe me. Do your research, okay? But I'm sharing and I'm basing all my shows on what I believe and what resonates with me, okay? So I'm educated to believe that whatever I do to the Palestinians will save us from another Holocaust. And when I aimed my rifle at a little girl, I realized that I was the evil one, and then I stopped. So this education is incredibly entrenched. And someone once said that religion is a sort of a mind infection. And this woman says, yeah. Ideologies also can be mind infection, big time. People are infected with it. They have no idea. You know, somebody's not going to say, oh, I'm indoctrinated, you know. I believe this instead of that. People don't even know. So when people say to me, Luca, how do I know if I'm indoctrinated or not? I tell them the simple reason that you're asking the questions lets me know should let you know that you're not indoctrinated, not as severely as you think. People like your family who throw you out or, you know, if anybody saw the movie Scent of a Woman with Al Pacino, when Al Pacino goes home to family on Thanksgiving, there you go. Okay. It's incredible how we've been, and you know, righteously so, rightfully so, because it had to be hidden really, really well, and it hasn't been. My grandmother was just probably laughing in her grave right now going, Luca's figuring it out, because you can't lie and get away with it. You can't. Okay? So everybody's like making you name jump all the time, you know? And let's use the Native American example, okay? I don't like the word Native American because we're not American, okay? First Nations. Well, we're not First Nations. You know, they don't like that, okay? First Nations people, no. Or the original people, no. Oh, we're not Indian either. We're not from India. Well, okay. So you can't please everyone, right? So if you say Jew, you have everybody panicking. Like saying sex for now. Good grief. When you do more research, you find out it's not necessarily, you know, you don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. Ah, so then you go, okay, Zionism. Oh, we're getting closer. And then you find out that Hitler himself coined that phrase, international Zionism. And that's exactly what it is. And when you do even more work, like they're asking me to go, you know, on my other show from Scotland, they're saying, Luca, why don't you go even further? It's a branch of Satanism, is it not? Yes, it is, because they're Satanists. We know that. Red robes, you know, partying and doing really weird stuff like that. Pride flag over the south portico of the wall of the White House for how long? We know they're perverts. We know they're working on the protocols of Zion, and that's what they're coming out with. That's what they're shoveling out. We know that. So I had this awesome clip from a Palestinian Christian. Let me drop you in Christian Palestine for about a minute and a half, and you'll really feel what I'm talking about. She's like, come on, people. You can't really believe this, you know? Think of when you listen to this clip, okay? Think of Israel being being the bad guy, okay? Which I'm sure everybody does already. But listen, when you listen to what she's saying, ask yourself, like, Israel's supposed to be in the Middle East. Israel is supposed to be a country in the Middle. How come it doesn't get along with everybody in the Middle East? Isn't that what it would do if it was naturally from the Middle East? It's not. And that's another side I loved. I love that angle, Luca. I love your angle on that one, because one Polish and two Romanian people are running Rothschild created Israel from 1917. Okay, yeah, we got it. So I'm going to drop you in Palestine, and you're going to really be able to feel what it's like. If I can set up the clip right here.
I have a serious question for Western Christians. I understand that you have most likely been brainwashed by Western media your whole entire life. But I need you to understand, and this is coming from a Palestinian Christian, that there has never once been an incident in Palestine where a Muslim unalived a Christian because of their faith. Never once. I mean, do you think we would still have churches standing if we didn't get along? Do you think the Muslims would hold the key to the Holy Sepulcher if we didn't get along? Do you realize that there's Christians in Gaza who get along with Muslims? Do you realize that they don't have to wear the hijab because they're Christian? Do you realize that the Muslims respect our religion? Do you realize that we have the same exact culture, just different religion? It's not what you guys think it is. It's not. So stop. Like, seriously, you need to educate yourself. Palestine is like no other place. It's so holy. And our only enemy is the illegal Zionists. It's not the Jews. The Jews are literally our cousins. It's Zionism. Eastern Europeans who are literally atheists. Zionism was created by an atheist. I mean, come on. You guys really can't be this crazy.
It's so cute. It's so cute to hear. You know, so, I mean, you know, it's all, you know, everybody hiding behind words and labels. You know, it's really sad to see. So I'm putting it all together, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted you to hear what I'm hearing from all sides, and I'm finding it really interesting. Like, I mean, it's getting better every day. Okay. Notes two. I wanted to bring you to Palestine also on something really beautiful. How about? See, this is what I mean. We have to literally take what we know or what we think we know, okay? Put it in a jar, put a lid on it, and put it away so that we can learn something new. Because if we don't learn, if we won't learn anything new, then we're not going to grow, right? So here again, I learned something new. This is so awesome. I never knew that Palestine and pomegranate had something in common. This is too cool. In Palestine, generations. You know how beautiful it is? Maybe it's not for you, but opening up a pomegranate, it's incredible. You need an apron. You need something that you don't like on you because you can get splattered all. I had a white shirt the first time I opened up a pomegranate. Oops. Big mistake. Splattered all kinds of red spots all over you. It's like, you know, it's like the cranberry juice type thing. It's so beautiful. And I was praying for healing at the same time. I just want to throw this in. And this is very sacred. I was praying on it, looking at the seeds, asking the seeds for healing. Gorgeous, gorgeous red and shiny seeds that are just there. You know, and you look at the intricate rows inside the pomegranate. It's just amazing. In Palestine, generations have embraced the traditional belief that every pomegranate contains a seed from paradise. This fostered a commitment to avoid wastefulness and taught us to be mindful of the blessings that this land offers. Isn't that gorgeous? Even sharing the juice of this fruit with children is guided by the belief that pomegranate fills the heart with faith. And you know what? This goes right down to my ceremonies that I had and that I didn't run those ceremonies. And the ceremonies that I was in, what they would do is they would bring beautiful bowls of fruit. Actually, I was running one ceremony that we had. They brought in bowls of fruit, okay? Actually, I think I went to the house to get it, which makes it even more special. And it's fruit inside the bowl, if you can imagine a good-sized fruit bowl, okay? Full, maybe half full of fruit, like, you know, with strawberries, with blackberries, with raspberries, with everything that goes along. And everything's mixed in because it's overnight and it's all juiced. Incredibly beautiful, right? And when they bring that in to the sweat lodge, people just put their hand in it dig in, turn your hand around, and you have it in your fist, in your handful. And you eat it like that. Some people just go, you know, two fingers at a time. Some people lift it up and squeeze and have the juice come out. It's really beautiful. And it's a spiritual thing, if I might say. And I wanted to, you know, make that very clear. So, you know, we all got to learn to live, to get along, and to not be worried of offending. I guess that's my main thing. But if you really look inside your heart, what really interests you, and you come from a good intent, a good direction, then you can't go wrong. And I think I'm in very, very good company. Steve, you're going to like this one. I want to talk about the ATF. Uh-oh. So there's my once non-commissioned Lieutenant General best friend sitting across from me going, Luca, you heard the news on the ATF? No, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, for those who don't know. You know how they're changing their laws, right? He's hearing from this because of where he is. Like, from that standpoint, a non-commissioned lieutenant general, you can see a lot of different things that most people can't see because they're too low.
They're probably changing their definitions, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what I mean. They're changing laws. They're changing definitions. Thank you. Yeah. So they can't get caught, and they won't get caught doing any of this. Wait till you hear what they're doing. And I'm gonna say it. It's a bombshell. Most people already know it. I'd be surprised. I'd like to know from a poll if people knew it or not already. So everybody in Congress has mud on them, right? So to a certain extent. So everything can be used against everybody, so nobody says anything, and everything's fine, right? People take each other into chambers before going out there, you know, discussing theatrics, I do believe, okay? So what my best friend here hears in Congress, the bunch of baboons, is it baboons, or is it the bunch of chimpanzees that are Congress, or is it baboons? I think it's baboons. Okay.
A bunch of monkeys is a Congress.
Yeah, there's a way. It's either monkeys or chimpanzees or baboons. I never know which one.
It's monkeys. Oh,
it's monkeys. Okay, whatever. 4.5 million guns are unaccounted for.
Okay. From where?
From the ATF itself. They're unaccounted for. they're lost. Oh,
I know where they're at.
The question, sir.
I know where they're at.
Oh, well, don't blow it. Don't blow it. Please allow me. Or it might be a different answer. You can tell me your answer afterwards. So they're supposedly lost. And I'm going, yeah, Luca, they have a serial number. That's the first thing my instinct said. So you're hearing a lot of this from my source, which watched it go down on C-SPAN right in front of everybody. You know, oh, we don't know. 4.5 million guns. They're not disappeared. They're not unaccounted for. They're not even lost. You start digging deeper and you go, proven by serial number, right? Okay, run this by me again. What do the illegals on the southern border, what do they get when they arrive? Let's go through this again. Okay. They get a credit card. They get a food stamp card. They get cash. They get a hotel room. They get a ride or a plane ride wherever they want to go. And they get handed some kind of gun, sure, semi-automatic, you know, and ammunition when they're processed. And all this makes perfect sense, to me anyways. You know, even if those serial numbers are traced, they're going to go right back to the ATF. So, of course, they're not going to say anything. They get everything and we don't, exactly, Annie, because that's exactly what they want to create. They want to create stuff like, you know, okay, we see one of those at Walmart. Right in town, right here in Keokuk in Walmart. Oh, America is so wonderful, you know, showing us the card. Oh, it's so wonderful to be here, showing us the cash. You know, we just happened to see it. You know, America is so wonderful. We love you. And he walks away with two kids and his wife, and he's so happy. Uh-huh. Right. They're already in Chicago, 5 hours east from my area. They're here already. They're causing an uproar in Chicago. A lot of them are being bussed here and there. You know? Another reason why I don't do politics on my show, Biden's son, and I will not say his name on the airwaves because it's not worth it, Biden's son used Air Force One to fly in prostitutes. You guessed it, up to $7,000 each per hour, and then flying them back. I wonder what the pilots must have thought about that one.
I'm sure they got rewarded also.
Yeah, but you know what? I was going to say the married ones with integrity. Okay. What do they do?
Integrity. What's that?
Yeah. If they're pilots with integrity, okay. Let's just say you're a pilot. You're married. You have integrity. Oops. Okay. Uh-oh. So, you know, so I've thought of writing that down too for this series. I knew somebody was going to say that, either you or me. You know, either that or you don't have any integrity and you're married, and put that ring away for a bit, and you can have a surprise there or back or both. Okay? That's how the world works, right? Unbelievable. So think about it. Okay? Something else called the fingerprint, which I thought was really interesting. Okay? I'm going, okay, I got to remember this too. In a movie, the Bourne conspiracy movies, I know you might not like movies too much, but they're dropping hints of what they're doing all the time. If you watch movies, they have a part in the Bourne conspiracy where they have the place that they're going to blow up, and they leave a fingerprint. So they have the fingerprint on a double-sided tape. They put the tape down, and when you lift the tape back up, you can see the fingerprint clearly that they're leaving there of somebody else. And don't I remember Whitney Webb, and I think I even played it on this show last week, she's saying how the U.S., or the USA Inc., let's call it, has the fingerprint, or she said has the what now? Not fingerprint. What was it? The footprint of any country that they like, be it Russia, be it China, be it North or South Korea, whatever, and blame others for what they themselves planted. You know, oh, we want war. Yeah, everybody wants war. So, you know, America can do what it wants. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll go along with it. Yeah, sure. We want war. Let's go for it. This is what's going on right now. And I can feel it. I can see it. I just can't explain it. You know, something else we were lied to in our life, which I really got upset about. And then I kind of sat back and I went, Luca, are you serious? Think about it. You know, wow. You know, well, it's really true, isn't it? Well, yeah. Wow. Okay. You know what I'm going to call this one? The Jonestown moment. Oh boy. Okay. Most people have heard of the Jonestown massacre or the Jonestown suicide or Jonestown, like, you know, Kool-Aid. That's where the Kool-Aid thing comes up with the Kool-Aid memes. Mass suicide, right? They're saying, great show, great show, great show. I'm not done yet. They want to kick me out? Uh-oh. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Mass suicide in 1978 under Jim Jones, right? Okay. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you guys this link too, if my computer will allow it. There we go. The following report that I offer today is written in 1985. Reading it, you will learn that the 1978 Jonestown mass suicide was in fact a massacre of over 900 men, women, and children by the CIA and its friends. Tips to everybody that already knew that, but I didn't, okay? And wow, okay? Furthermore, the People's Temple cult was just one part of an ongoing mind control experiment in which Jonestown concentration camp, I don't like that word, but that's okay, was only one of a network of camps located in the country's the U.S. national security state has subverted around the globe. And he says she knew it. Yeah, well, you're smart, okay? I'm getting there. So that's like, wow, you know? Phew. So I'm at a loss. Oh, okay, in the Tesla moment. Yeah, I got to throw that at you, too, before I go. Okay, Tesla. Some people might know this. Some people might not. This is cute. Okay, so Tesla is out there making, you know, like he's out there shooting his rays out, or whatever you'd like to call them. Steve, you probably know more about that than I do. I don't know what you call them, but he's out there shooting radio waves out into space, right?
It's microwaves.
Microwaves, okay. So when Tesla was working on his radio and transmitting into outer space, he did communicate with something or someone, which came back with a very strong and distinct message. He was told to watch out. He was told to be careful. And this was originating from a good source, telling him to beware because there aren't that many good sources out there and they're watching the Earth. It could be very easy to spot what he's doing. And he was politely warned, be careful what you broadcast. I believe that. Can you imagine? You get a note like that back. Oh, wow. You know, be careful what you know, good heavens. Steve, what do you think of that one? That's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
You know, you're at your telescope Hey.
He was also said to have communicated telepathically with some sort of beings.
Incredible. You know, and there's so much to know. Everything is such a rabbit hole. There's so many rabbit holes everywhere. So it's really exciting to be on the network with everybody. Thank you for being there. Thank you for supporting me. And I love you all to death. And when I do make some money, we will all party. Yes, we will. And I'll be Shake and Wake Radio will be the first place where I go to say thank you. And when we start the show next week, we're going to talk about my mother as a musician and how she always taught me about the KISS formula. You can't go previewing and announcing what you're going to talk about, Luca, because half the time you don't have the time in your show to say what you're going to say. So we'll have to do something about that. Next time we'll start with that. I'll talk about my mother and her being a pianist and how incredibly she set me on the path to music. So thanks, everybody. And we will see you next week. Be safe, everyone. And don't go away. Like, I'll be back.